It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It's a big day in the United States of America today. This is the day the United States Senate will vote on whether to call witnesses in the impeachment trial for President Donald Trump. They spent 8 hours more with questions and answers yesterday. I hope you watched it. Fascinating stuff. But today, now, they make that decision about whether to call witnesses. And we are, as an organization, American Family Association, AFA Action is encouraging you to call your senator and ask them to vote against the notion of having witnesses and encouraging them to acquit the president. And so if you could call your senator, that would be, you always ask me, what can I do? That's what you can do. AFA Action, you can go to afaaction.net if you like, and that will help you do it more easily. Or you can just look up that number and call your senator. I suggest the home office. It's always better to call them in their home state than it is to call them in their D.C. office. That's just my personal opinion. So two things, vote no on additional trial witnesses and encourage them to acquit the president. That's what AFA Action is supporting and hoping that you will join us in making that plea to your senator. Well, it all kind of it connects with other events happening. I mean, this is an amazing day. Today is also Brexit. By midnight tonight, Great Britain will be leaving the European Union. That is pretty stunning. So that's happening today. This weekend is the Super Bowl. And many of you, of course, will be watching that. A lot of you will be, as a matter of fact. And then Monday are the Iowa caucuses. The first time the Democratic candidates really go to, the people go to the polls and vote their choices on what's happening in the presidential race on the Democratic side. And that reminds me, it ties in, of course, to these impeachment hearings this past couple of weeks we've been watching, at least in part. So Pam Bondi is one of the defenders of the president, and she did an excellent presentation last week about the Bidens and their connection and Hunter Biden. There's been much made about some alleged corruption and then much made by the left about the fact that the accusation is that the president tried to withhold aid from Ukraine, intended to withhold aid from Ukraine, as a punishment to Ukraine if they did not investigate his political rival, Joe Biden, and his son, Hunter. Of course, the president argues with that notion, and it seems as though the people that testified, it was all hunches and assumptions. There was never any indication that anything like that actually happened. The aid was only held up for a very short time, and the Ukrainians never even knew that it had been held up. And it was aid for 5 years, so it didn't have any effect whatsoever on the money that we were already giving them. And so the facts don't really comport with the theory. Then the question is raised that the president was trying to slander or slur his political rival. So people want to know then what went on with that with Joe Biden and Hunter. And Pam Bondi is the one who delivered that part of the president's defense. Let's listen.
The Washington Post ran a story about it. It said, the appointment of the vice president's son to a Ukrainian oil board looks nepotistic at best, nefarious at worst. Again, the appointment of the vice president's son to a Ukrainian oil board looks nepotistic at best, nefarious at worst. And the media didn't stop questioning, asking questions here. It kept going. Here's ABC.
You have to fight the cancer of corruption.
But then something strange happened. Just 3 weeks later, a Ukrainian natural gas company, Burisma, accused of corruption, appoints Hunter Biden, seen here in their promotional videos, to their board of directors, paying his firm more than $1 million a year.
Here's more from ABC. Continued on.
And Ukraine wasn't the only country where Hunter Biden's business and his father's diplomacy as vice president intersected. It also happened in China.
This video shows Chinese diplomats greeting Vice President Biden as he arrived in Beijing in December of 2013. Right by his side, his son Hunter. Less than 2 weeks later, Hunter's firm had new business, creating an investment fund in China involving the government-controlled Bank of China, with reports they hope to raise $1.5 billion.
In fact, every witness who was asked about Hunter Biden's involvement with Burisma agreed there was a potential appearance of a conflict of interest. Multiple House Democrat witnesses, including those from the Department of State, the National Security Council, and others, unanimously testified there was a potential appearance of a conflict of interest.
That was a fascinating testimony. And I have to say, you know, John Kerry's son actually was in partnership with Joe Biden's son and pulled out of this because he himself felt it was very unethical and he tried to stop it. So Pam presented all of that very interesting. Now, how does that purport with that happened just several days ago? And now this is Friday when the vote is going to be taken and the Iowa caucuses are on Monday. So what's happening in Iowa? Well, what's happening in Iowa is that Biden is still ahead in the polls in Iowa. He's not ahead by much because Bernie Sanders is giving him a run for his money, followed by Elizabeth Warren and then Pete Buttigieg, and all the others then come in. They're hardly a ripple on the screen. But that's the way things are panning out in Iowa. So Democrats that are worried about Bernie Sanders winning the nomination are running an ad against him. Let's listen to it.
The most important thing is we have to beat Trump.
We've seen the damage that Trump and the Republican Congress have done.
I doubt if Bernie Sanders can beat Trump.
I like Bernie. I think he has great ideas. But Michigan, Pennsylvania, Iowa, they're just not going to vote for a socialist.
I do have some concerns about Bernie Sanders' health, considering the fact that he did have a heart attack.
I think it's very important that the Democrats nominate somebody that can beat Trump.
I don't feel as though Bernie Sanders would do well against Donald Trump.
I just don't think Bernie can beat Trump.
DMFI PAC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? They even bring up his heart attack. So Democrats do not want Bernie Sanders to win because they're worried. You know, I don't think it's because they care about socialism, because I think most of them are in their policies socialistic. And some of them may have reservations, but I think the leaders of the party are not so afraid of that. But they're afraid that Bernie can't carry the banner for them and beat the current president. Not yet. Just give it a little bit more time. And then we can get some of these younger socialists in. That's, I think, what they're thinking. It was interesting to me, Michael Moore made an appearance a couple of weeks ago, maybe 10 days ago, in support of Bernie Sanders, and he said some interesting things about what it meant to be a Bernie supporter. Let's listen.
We can be free, and if we inaugurate President Bernie Sanders 1 year from this month, we will be on the road to being free, my friends, with our Senate, with our House, and most of all, most importantly, us entering the Oval Office with Bernie Sanders. That's how it's going to happen. That's why they're afraid. He's number one in the polls today. The New York Times poll. The person in second place is 7 points behind. But don't take this for granted. You have to show up. You have to act like it's not going to happen because you never know. We know not to trust the polls. But it's so, I'll tell you who's read the Times this morning. Corporate America, Wall Street, the banks, the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies. They couldn't eat breakfast this morning. They called each other up and they said, how did this happen? So be ready. Because they're not going to let this happen easily. You know this, right? So you know we're in the French Resistance now, right? 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 You got nine. Remember the French Resistance, right? They had to, nobody in the French Resistance ever said, yeah, I know there's only 9 days to our caucus, but, you know, I've got to get the kids to soccer this week. No, the kids can walk to soccer this week. Nobody in the French Resistance ever said, geez, I'd like to help you stop those Nazis coming down the road there, but we've got couples therapy at 4 today. No! You have to get along with your spouse for the next week or two. There's no couples therapy. Just get along. Get along for the greater good of this country. You're in the French resistance. You're in the Iowa resistance. You're in the Iowa resistance.
How insulting to the French who remember the resistance. Maybe some of you don't. Those French that chose to join the resistance took their life in their own hands. They fought the Nazis while their government had caved to the Nazis. They worked behind the scenes to try to help Jews escape. They tried to defeat the Nazis. They did various forms of fighting. It was amazing what they did with such courage and bravery. The Nazis were slaughtering people, killing people, oppressing their own people, propagandizing their youth. I can't imagine that Trump supporters, we don't even have that kind of power. We're not that organized. Are you kidding me? But that's how Michael Moore, the filmmaker, sees what's happening in Iowa. Again, the polls are showing that Biden, at least at this point, is still in the lead with Sanders in second place and Warren bringing up the lead. And speaking of Elizabeth Warren, she just tweeted, she made her position known on another issue. States should focus on funding public schools, not private ones, especially not ones that maintain anti-LGBTQ plus policies. We must ensure every kid, especially LGBTQ plus kids, can get high-quality public education. So Elizabeth Warren, that's her. She's weighing in. Those are the top three candidates. And it's interesting that Pete Buttigieg is not getting better traction in Iowa. I would have thought that he would. That kind of surprises me. All right, so back to kind of full circle, what's happening today. Today is the vote in the Senate on whether or not to call more witnesses. And if they don't call more witnesses, it will be the day then they take the vote whether or not to acquit President Donald Trump. And so we're encouraging you to call your senators and ask them to vote for no witnesses and then to vote for acquittal. And it might be over today. It just might. But don't be surprised if some, 11th hour bombshell is dropped, because that's what the left does. There may be some surprise in store for us today as you go about your business and watch the news. That's kind of the way they kind of save things till the last. So let's see what they do today to try to stop this. Also want to remind you that Monday is the Iowa caucuses. We will be talking about that, and I'm anxious to hear how you feel about those of you in Iowa, what's going on. We'll explain the caucus process a little bit more clearly. But this weekend is something actually very positive happening. There is a brand new documentary about the life of Justice Clarence Thomas. And it is, it's a fascinating look at how he was raised. It's the trial or the Senate hearing that he had, in his own words, along with his wife, Virginia. And it's starting tonight in theaters all over the country. We're going to be talking to the producer of that movie in a second, and I think that you'll find this fascinating. So if you haven't got plans for tonight, and even if you don't, it would be a good time to just drop everything and buy a ticket and go see this movie. Even if you don't go, it'd be good to buy a ticket, because the left goes to movies. And that's why Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been made such an icon, because they've made three movies about her life. And of course, it's all painted with a very, very nice brush, not necessarily connected to the reality of who Ruth Bader Ginsburg is. She was an ACLU attorney. She was a rabid leftist. I can't believe, honestly, that 98 senators confirmed her to the Supreme Court, because she was so very radical, and they knew that. But if you watch the movies, you think she's just this nice little surviving old lady who's very smart, and she is funny. I actually watched the movies and enjoyed them very much, but this is a chance for Justice Clarence Thomas to tell his story, which, by the way, is far more compelling than the story of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But I enjoyed her movie, too. So I'm challenging all of you to try this movie out. But stay tuned, because in just a few minutes, you're going to hear from the producer of the movie and find out a little bit more about it. So it's called Created Equal. And I'll be right back after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Judge, Thomas, you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Please be seated.
When I was six, I wandered the streets by myself. You were hungry and didn't know when you'd eat. Someplace in my life, the road split off. I'd gone to the seminary. I'd gone to all white schools. I was never going to be a part of that world. I was never going to be white. The problem is I could never go back completely to the world I came from. We're supposed to be revolutionaries. We were for anybody who's kind of in your face. I saw what I had become, lashing out at every single thing. And then I asked God that if you take anger out of my heart, I'll never hate again. And that was the beginning of the slow return to where I started.
I want my candidacy to unify our country.
I was under constant attack. You're not really black because you're not doing what we expect black people to do.
That I will nominate Judge Clarence Thomas to serve as Associate Justice of the United States Supreme Court.
That's when all heck broke loose.
Judge Thomas began to use work situations to discuss sex.
We know exactly what's going on here. This is the wrong black guy. He has to be destroyed. You really didn't matter. What mattered was what they wanted.
So you'd still like to serve on the Supreme Court?
I'd rather die than withdraw from the process. I wanted to be able to say I lived up to my oath and did my best.
Sandy Rios with you. That's the trailer from a movie that's opening this Friday night in theaters near you called Created Equal. And that's the voice of Justice Clarence Thomas. It is the untold story of the America to the American people. Everyone knows about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I myself have been to every movie made about her. I have enjoyed all of those movies. And yet as I watch them, I know they're really only telling a tiny part of her story and certainly putting her in the most positive light. People think they know her, but they don't. They make T-shirts. Everyone wears them, but people don't know. A story that surpasses hers in so many ways, the story of Justice Clarence Thomas. He was nominated to the Supreme Court in 1991 by Herbert Walker Bush, and it was an incredible battle. Some of you don't remember that. Some of you weren't born yet. But the accusations, it was kind of like the Kavanaugh hearing before we'd ever seen anything like it. Well, the story is going to come to life as told in this movie, Created Equal, which opens this Friday night. And I've asked someone to join us who knows all about it. He's spent a great deal of his life, I'm sure, in the last few months making this happen. His name is Michael Pack. He's the president of Manifold Productions, which is an independent film and television production company. Michael has produced some great documentaries that you've seen on PBS and other places, things like Rickover, The Birth of Nuclear Power, narrated by Joan Allen, or Rediscovering Alexander Hamilton, hosted by Richard Brookhiser. God and the Inner City, narrated by Felicia Rashad. Rediscovering George Washington. And many, many, I couldn't tell you all the titles, but some great stuff has been given to us by Michael Pack and his organization, Manifold Productions. And so Michael joins us this morning to talk about this new movie, Created Equal. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Sandy. Thank you for having me on.
You know what? There are so many untold stories. I don't need to tell you. We live in a time of fantasy. So why this one? Why did this grab you?
Well, I had heard that Justice Thomas had some willingness to tell his story. He was getting tired of being defined by his enemies and tired of the half-truths and lies about him. And after talking to him, I realized what a great story it was. I didn't really know that much about it, but his story beyond the confirmation battle, which we all remember, those of us of a certain age, his story is so much bigger. It's really a story of resilience, of coming from way behind, from poverty and the segregated South, to the highest court in the land. It's a great Horatio Alger story with many twists and turns, a moving story.
You know, I just made the inference reference to the RG, you know, the notorious RBG, mm. Ruth Bader Ginsburg movies, and perhaps you've seen those too. They're very well done.
Yeah.
And very enjoyable. But Michael, I know her story. I know what she's actually done, and I know that they left out so much of the really bad things that she's done and how she's contributed, especially on the issue of abortion. On this movie, how could you be sure that you were telling the truth? Is this truth, or is this just more spin on now on Clarence Thomas?
Now, our film, unlike the RBG films, our film is called Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words. And we don't pretend to tell the objective truth, who could, but we say that we give Clarence Thomas's version of his life, the way he experienced it. So whether you know him, whether you like him or don't like him, he's a powerful, important figure. It's worth it to hear his side. So that's what we tried to be true to. I interviewed Justice Thomas and his wife, Ginny, for over 30 hours, really unprecedented access from any Supreme Court justice. And my goal, and we boiled it down to the film, to the two-hour film, but my goal was to have Justice Thomas look to camera, tell his story directly to viewers, and you see his life as he experienced it. So it's true to that. I will say about the RBG film, you mentioned you've seen them all. First of all, people who are more likely to agree with RBG, people on the left, seem to be better at coming out and showing up for their film. So I hope the people who are inclined to like Clarence Thomas come to this film, actually go to theaters. And I actually hope the people who like RBG come. As you said, you went to those movies, as did I, and we learned something. I think people who don't agree with Clarence Thomas would learn a lot coming to this one, too.
No doubt about it. I think one of the untold stories is that, you know, Clarence Thomas is quiet on the court. It's just this last year or two that he started to speak up a little bit. But before that, he never asked questions. So people don't understand or know what an incredibly powerful communicator he is. I would say, you know, you understand Q factor and you understand communication skills. If you're going to have one person on camera for third, you know, I know that Jenny was with him and she's a great communicator too, but he is dynamite. You could, even if he were a totally different kind of man, you could have a good film just taping him talking, don't you think?
That is right. I mean, I originally was going to do a more traditional documentary interviewing, you know, 12 or 15 people across the spectrum with different views. But I realized Justice Thomas was the one to tell his story. He tells it better. People who haven't heard him speak don't know that he's actually a great speaker. There are myths and misconceptions about Justice Thomas that are legion. And one is that he's a quiet, taciturn person. Quite the opposite. He is a great storyteller. He has a great laugh and a great voice. So yes, who better to tell his story? I mean, that's why me and I abandoned all the other interviews and focused on Justice Thomas. And we had a second interview, a smaller one with Ginny, who, as you say, is also a great communicator.
Yeah, I guess I should say it would be, I guess, just I know both of them. And I'm sorry that when you talked about his laughter, I laughed because really it's infectious. He is the most he has a personality is bigger than Dallas and spreading like Houston, as they say. So but he also is a man of such integrity. So I want to ask you, when you're talking to them, and I'm assuming that you went into this knowing the story pretty well in advance.
Yes.
Or did you? Did you go in wanting to be surprised?
I did. I mean, not in the beginning of doing the research, but by the time of the interview, yes, I have read all the books.
So so were there any surprises for you as he was telling his story?
I think the surprise, the thing that's revelatory about the film is his character, who he is, his resiliency in spite of many, many difficulties over the entire arc of his life. I mean, you know the story, Sandy, but your listeners probably do not. You know, he grew up, he was born in Pinpoint, a Gullah-speaking area outside of Savannah, so English wasn't his first language. His mother was poor. His father left before he could remember. It was real rural poverty. And then when he was six, his mother moved and took him and his brother to Savannah. He said, exchanging rural poverty for urban squalor, where he didn't have enough to eat. He was cold in the winter. He didn't even have a bed to sleep in, slept in a chair. His mother would bring him to school, but no one cared, and he just leave school and wander the streets. So that kind of, and it's the segregated South. So that kind of dire poverty in segregation is pretty hard. And then after a few years, his mother realized she couldn't take care of her two boys and brought them to her father, his grandfather, to raise. And that's what turned Justice Thomas's life around. His grandfather led a small business, made Thomas work all the time, and it was hard work. It was self-discipline. It was tough love. And even though his grandfather was functionally illiterate, he believed in education, sent Justice Thomas to parochial schools, then segregated in the 50s in Savannah, but run by Irish nuns who also gave him self-discipline, a good education, and Christian Catholic values. And Justice Thomas thrived in that environment, so much so that he wanted to become a priest, entered the seminary. The seminaries had been all white. He would have been one of the first African-American priests. So this was his first experience with that kind of environment. And there he experienced several racist incidents, most notoriously in 1968, watching TV, when Martin Luther King Jr. was shot, one of the seminarians said, "I hope that dies." And that capped off his feeling that the church wasn't doing enough for civil rights. And then he lost his vocation. You know, he decided he didn't want to be a priest, told his grandfather, who promptly kicked him out. His only father figure, the person he loved most, kicked him out. So then Justice Thomas went through his radical period. He became angry, angry at everybody. He said race and racism explained everything. His grandfather was a sucker, and he had nowhere to go. Had to go wherever he could, and he happened to have a full scholarship at Holy Cross College in Worcester, Massachusetts, and went there and continued his radicalism. Hung out with Marxist students. They invited Black Panthers to the campus to speak. They supported everyone who was in your face, from Malcolm X to Huey Newton to Angela Davis. And he went through this radical period, and then the next part of the film is his journey away from that. So it's a very complicated story, Sandy. You know it, but it's moving to listen to someone go through it. I feel I'd never do justice to it summarizing it.
No, I understand. Plus, again, having him tell it in his own voice, which is so compelling. It's hard to I don't want to overstate this, because sometimes you can overplay and then it kind of messes up the reality. But honestly, you could sit at his feet and listen for hours, whatever story he was telling, and he has tons. But it's just as but let me just tell people, so the opening night is Friday. And so there are theaters all over the country showing it. And you can find out where they're showing it at justicethomasmovie.com. JusticeThomasMovie.com, but plus it'll give you a lot more information about it. Why is it important to go? I'm sure it's important to you because you want your movie to be successful. But what other motivations are there for people to go this opening weekend?
Look, I think it's a good movie. I think they will be moved. I think they should bring their family, especially younger people. I think it's an inspiring story. But also, as we were saying earlier, Sandy, if you want there to be movies like this, you have to show up and buy the tickets. You know, the left does a very good job of this. They show up to their films and filmmakers. They, you know, it's all, as our distributor says, about butts and seats. You have to go and actually do it. One of the reasons the left owns the culture is they care about it, they support it, they show up. So we really need to do it. I mean, it's not an eat your spinach thing. It'll be a great experience. But it's also important in the long run. And if the movie isn't playing where people are, if a big enough group signs up, we can have a special screening wherever you are. So that's all on the website, justicemovie.com, as is the trailer, which you showed a part of. So it's important for the movie, it's important, but it's important to support these kinds of movies more broadly.
Yeah, I think, let me also say from my perspective as a talk show host who talks about these issues all the time. We are at such a twisted juncture in terms of race relations, thanks to the left, who have agitated and agitated both sides, blacks and whites, against each other. They love agitation. They love to stir up trouble. And they love to distort. Justice Thomas does not fit the mold of what the left is trying to do. And so his story has been blocked out. His story is terrific. And his story will bring healing, I think, to black and white Americans once they know the truth. It's a great story of victory and reconciliation For heaven's sake, you know, Justice Thomas is married to the very white Virginia Thomas, and even that alone is a huge part of their personal story. So, and that's probably why the left hates him even more. It's certainly the radical left. But it's Justice Thomas, the movie, JusticeThomasMovie.com. We'll put that on our Facebook page so that you can find it and figure out how to do it. My guest is Michael Peck, and he is the producer of the movie. Michael, one of the things we have not touched on, really, we touched on it, but not enough, and that is the hearing itself, his confirmation hearings, which happened back in 1991. I want to touch on that with you in a second when we return, and also what he and then Virginia as well had to say about that part of their lives. The movie's called Created Equal. It opens this weekend in a theater near you, so I hope that you'll go and see it. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. Michael.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Michael Peck is my guest, and he is the producer of this brand new movie called Created Equal, which is opening up this weekend. Friday night is the first night, and I think you'll want to see it. I'm telling you. If you go to JusticeThomasMovie.com, you can find out where it's playing near you. Michael, by the way, I just want to say, as a way of personally, Michael has had a lot of very important positions besides his founding of his own company, Manifold Productions, which has done such great stuff. But he also has been nominated by President Trump to be the head of Voice of America and some, not just VOA, is it, Michael? It's a large, you would oversee that. But what was the name of the title that he wants to give you, if you could just get confirmed?
It's CEO of the U.S. Agency for Global Media, which includes the Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Radio Free Asia, and the other broadcasters. Yeah,
we can.
That's another story, Sandy.
Yeah, I know. I was just saying, I was thinking the same thing. I could say a lot about that, and I'd love to hear what you have to say about it, but we'll have to schedule a different interview. But I want people to know that about you. The nomination is being held up, and as are so many other fine people being held up from serving this president by the resistors, whether they're Republicans or Democrats. It's just amazing. But, Michael, let's go back to this movie. Justice Thomas has a great story about, I have to tell you, the part about him becoming a leftist radical, I did not know. Until a conversation with him not that long ago, a couple of years ago, I guess. But that was one of the really important parts of your movie. Tell us about that.
Well, it's one thing to become a radical in the late 60s. The amazing thing is Justice Thomas managed to sort of think his way out of it. I mean, he hit a kind of rock bottom. He went to a particularly violent anti-war demonstration in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and he felt caught up in mob mentality. He saw what he had become, as he said. When he finally returned to Holy Cross in the middle of the night, the chapel was closed. He hadn't prayed in many years, but he went to the chapel and asked God to take anger out of his heart. And he sort of, that was his journey back to both faith and to the values of his grandfather and the Irish nuns. But it took him many years after that to become politically conservative. He saw, he had to sort of work through, as he saw the problems of both the radical left and liberalism, in the failure of affirmative action, busing in nearby Boston, and many other programs, their approach to violent crime. And it wasn't until he was back in Washington in 1980, he finally voted for Ronald Reagan, his first Republican, and went to work in the Reagan administration. And that began Justice Thomas's life as a very public figure. And from then, the attacks by the left began, often tinged with racist stereotypes. Right from the beginning, all the way up, as you said right before the break, right up through his contentious confirmation battle and up to, and continuing up during his time on the court.
Yes, it's an ongoing battle, and that reminds me of another battle that he's had. I don't think he's really fought this one because He's not one to put himself forward, not really. He's an interesting person, but it's not like he has, it's not like it's ego for him. It isn't ego. And that brings me to that battle at the Black History Museum, African American History Museum, right on the mall. You've had quite a battle. I think you've discovered on his behalf how undercovered he is in that museum. Describe how they cover who he is and what you observe there.
I mean, I think a disgrace that when it first opened, there was nothing about Justice Thomas, Clarence Thomas, in the whole museum. And it's four floors of a huge amount of material. They've actually done a great job with our archives. The archives are vast and the story is vast. Nowhere, nothing about Justice Thomas. And under pressure from his friends, they finally put a little bit about him off to the side of a larger exhibit about Thurgood Marshall. And, you know, meanwhile, Anita Hill, there's a big photo, Speaking Truth to Power. We didn't talk that much about the confirmation battle, but her story is there without even just giving both sides of the controversy. I really feel he is minimized. And in fact, I feel conservative African Americans are minimized in that museum throughout. It's as if they didn't exist and there's not such an intellectual trend going back to aspects of Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington up to today, you know, Thomas Sowell and other great African-American, both thinkers and activists.
It's just disgusting. It really is. It's the way the left manages history. It's not necessarily that they lie, but they do that also. It's that they omit. They just leave out. And having worked with PBS a number of years with your documentaries, you know that well. They present everything. They just don't present everything.
Well, that's right. Which stories do you wish to tell? You know, some people wanted to tell the Ruth Bader Ginsburg story, and more power to them. We want to tell this story. And so people have to come out and support this, you know, just like other people went out to support the RBG film, which did fabulously well in theaters. His story, as you said earlier, Sandy, is way more dramatic than RBG's. His life is more complicated. It's got more twists and turns. It's way more emotional. Got more to it, you know, on the face of it, just as a story, to say nothing of the fact that I personally prefer his jurisprudence to Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah, but I still enjoyed her movie. Yeah, so people,
yeah,
to that
right.
point. All right, JusticeThomasMovie.com, JusticeThomasMovie.com. One last question before we say goodbye to you, Michael. You interviewed both Virginia and Justice Thomas for 30 hours. What, in a word, was her contribution to that conversation?
Well, Jenny really found it hard. I mean, they both found it hard. I mean, especially asking them to relive the confirmation battles, which were so emotional to them. I think that I actually was going to only interview Justice Thomas, but he was given no editorial power or influence on the show, but he made only one suggestion in the entire time I worked with him, and that was that I should also interview Ginny. So we interviewed her separately. It is true, he was right about that, as you'd expect. She was really able to speak, especially about what it was like, and especially as the wife of Justice Thomas, to go through that confirmation battle. She spoke of it as being a spiritual battle, and it was the second part of the confirmation battle. They had an earlier one. By then, they were spent. They had to look for divine guidance. And she really talked about that in a very emotional and honest way. I appreciate her doing that for me. I know it was not easy.
That was Michael Pack, the producer of that new movie, Created Equal, which comes out this weekend, tonight, for some of you. It's JusticeThomasMovie.com. I can't say enough about it. I'll be there. I will be there. But let me just say that he was just referring to Virginia Thomas, who was Clarence Thomas's wife, who sat next to the nominee, Judge Clarence Thomas, at the time at his confirmation. And what you probably, most of you don't remember this, I'm guessing. Some of you who are like of a certain age, like I am, will remember that Justice Thomas went through, really, he called it actually, in his own words, a high-tech lynching. It was horrendous. It really was. It was the first time I had ever seen anything like this on national television, and I personally was riveted. It's before I ever started on radio. I was still just singing at the time, but I always cared about what was happening in the world, but not into politics and news like I am now. But I watched it as a mom, a young mom, and I was appalled. I was just appalled. And so as it developed toward the end, the Senate, you know, hearings are taking place. This Anita Hill, who was a former employee of Justice Thomas, they brought the left, found her to come out and testify against him. And she said she accused him of coming on to her sexually. And it became, if you really look at the details, and you can Google them to find them if you are interested. I don't want to go into those details. But it was really, compared to what we're dealing with in today's world, silly stuff. There was no touching, nothing like that. It was conversations where she, according to her, where she perceived that he was flirting. And the interesting thing was, we find out later, I'm not sure if it came out in that trial, that she had followed him to various assignments and had worked for him at various places. Obviously didn't feel too threatened. Maybe he had I don't know. I always wondered if she had a crush on him. But of course, in the trial, they made it sound like it was terrible. And it was just, it cast a pall, and it was very hard on Virginia Thomas to sit there and listen to that. It was the first time we'd ever heard anything so base in a Senate hearing. It really was amazing. So they endured that for, I'm not sure how many days, but it seemed a long time to me. And one of the chief mockers and questioners who really went after Clarence Thomas was, guess who? It was Vice President Joe Biden, who was at the time the senator from Delaware. And I want you to hear how Joe Biden went after him, Senator Biden at the time, and Justice Thomas' thoughts about that. Let's listen.
Good morning, Judge. Welcome to the blinding lights. Finding out what you mean when you say that you would apply the natural law philosophy to the Constitution is, in my view, the single most important task of this committee.
Senator Biden was very focused on natural law. How did that go?
Who knows? I have no idea what he was talking about.
I just want to make sure we all know what we're talking about here, that you and I know at least what we're talking about here. There's a fervent and aggressive school of thought that wishes to see natural law further inform the Constitution than it does now, argued against by the positivist led by Judge Bork. Now, again, that may be lost on all the people. You know, and I know what we're talking about.
I have to be perfectly honest with you. You sit there and you have no idea what they are talking about. All I know is that he was asking me these questions about natural law.
Someone may apply it in a way, like Moore, who leads him in a direction that is, quote, liberal. You may apply it in a way that leads you in a direction that's conservative. Or you may, like many argue, not apply it at all. But it is a fundamental question that is going to be almost impossible for non-lawyers to grasp in an exchange. But you know, and I know, it is a big, big deal. And in conclusion,
one of the things you do in hearings is you have to sit there and look attentively at people you know have no idea what they're talking about. And it was fine. I understood what he was trying to do. I didn't really appreciate it.
That was just the first part. And when you see the clip, you see Joe Biden smiling, kind of laughing. You know, and I know, Justice. You know, other people don't know, but you and I know. And so Justice Thomas continues. Let's listen.
Natural law was nothing more than a way of tricking me into talking about abortion.
Well, you know.
Since many Catholic moral philosophers saw the two things as intimately related. But my interest in natural law was different.
Those who subscribe to this moral code view of natural law call into question a wide range of personal and family rights, from reproductive freedom to each individual's choice over procreation.
And so that's just a clip from the movie. And I wanted you to hear the Joe Biden of 1991, because he is running for president, and he is the one who really went after Clarence Thomas with a vengeance. I think you'll want to see that. It's called Created Equal. It is in theaters beginning tonight and this weekend. It's very important. I think that here's the point. If this movie could get into the mainstream of American culture the way Ruth Bader Ginsburg's movies have flattered and lifted her up on a pedestal she doesn't belong on, This is the kind of movie that needs to be into the mainstream of public life. It needs to be in high schools and colleges. These are the things that kids don't know. They have no idea. And, of course, I have to say, Justice Thomas would say that the reason they came after him with such a vengeance was that he was the wrong kind of black person. In fact, in his own words, he said that they were, as I mentioned earlier, it was a high-tech lynching for uppity blacks who in any way deign to think for themselves, to do for themselves, to have different ideas. Isn't it ironic that so many black Americans allegedly are supporting Joe Biden? I don't think they really know what Joe Biden did to Clarence Thomas. And it was, I think you could argue, because of his race, he was the wrong person, he held the wrong views. How inconvenient for the left that this black man should hold conservative views on abortion and other things. And so it was amazing. If you have a chance, you should go Google and go back and watch some of those hearings. But short of that, the movie starts, Created Equal, tonight in a theater near you. You can find the placement at justicethomasmovie.com. Hey, this has been very enjoyable. And I'm looking forward to tonight, and I hope that you'll come along with us, and we'll talk about it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.